After you have a brush with death, what do you do with your life? You could write a fable. That's what Seattle writer and musician Ken Boynton has done, a fable inspired by not one, but two near-death experiences. His first one was...
I got the flu, and then I got sicker, and inside of 2 days, I was in the ICU with complete kidney failure and sepsis, and they kept telling my wife that I was not going to survive. I got H1N1. And so that was about 8 or 9 days of, I woke up after 4 days, sort of confused of why I'd been unconscious. So it left a lot of unanswered questions, but mostly 8 months of trying to recover enough to get through the day. I'd work for 20 minutes and then fall over and sleep for 3 hours. And 3 months later, we took a trip. We had been in Louisiana when this happened, and we'd come home, and then we took a trip to Los Angeles for something that my wife had to do. And on the way to the hotel, we got in a giant car accident on the 10 at high speed in our cab that went up on two wheels. And we fortunately came out of it without a scratch, although it was more traumatic for me because I was awake. So for a near-death experience, I think being unconscious is really the way to go. So then after that, it just changes you. It changes how you disagree with each other. It changes how you look at what you're doing. It changes the people that you want to hang out with.
Well, what did that look like for you, the changes?
You want to make sure every moment matters. And because Friday I was fine, Saturday I was a little bit sick, Sunday I never got out of bed, and Monday I was in ICU. So it happened so quickly, you realize I have no control over anything.
And you somehow wanted to communicate something to the rest of us.
Yeah, I don't know if I felt a responsibility. One of my friends said, because I write other things, I should do something with it. I don't know that I felt a responsibility to, but my own mind was surprising me with the things that it would think. It was going off and thinking things. And I started writing them down. And then I thought, well, maybe there's a book here or something. And I started to write it, and it was just horrible. It's very important to move through your life.
Yes.
And so I put it down.
I've learned the following things.
Yes. And you should internalize them. And I just stopped. And then I woke up one morning and I thought, it's a fable. It'd be a fable.
It put me in the mind of Carl Sagan, who did that Pale Blue Dot. Oh, I guess it was the 70s. Every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization.
Yeah, that we're all from this little tiny... I love Pale Blue Dot. I hadn't heard it before. I've called it the tiny little golf ball suspended in blackness, or a little rock somehow floating in the vast emptiness of space.
There is a tradition in going to that image in one way or another, right? You mentioned it in your credits, I think, the Apollo 8 photos.
Yeah, that was the thing that did it for me as a kid, just thinking that image of the Earth. It was jarring because we didn't see the whole thing like you'd see it in a classroom. It was in shadow partially because obviously it would be. But we hadn't really thought that through. And I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, there'll be no more wars now.
You're not alone, though. Even astronauts have come away with that. They talk about that experience. So the book proceeds with eventually humans coming along onto this rock.
Yeah, the idea was really of the life of the Earth. The percentage we get to spend as individuals has to be a comically small number. And so I asked a mathematician friend, who said, this is what I'm looking for. I just know it's going to be 0.00000 something. And we did it for, I think, 70 years and for 100 years or something in there. maybe
good.
The early humans, 40 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And it is. The numbers don't really vary that much. You know, it's a few decades of difference. But it's funny to look at and think of that and think that's all we have. We have that little tiny blip. And so that became, you know, the story of the Earth's life with us on it is sort of the first half of the book. And then it turns into a random person's
one of those humans
observations. One of 350,000 born on some particular day who grew up wondering about these things.
How do you live differently now?
Well, I'd like to say that it colors absolutely everything. And you go through life thinking, oh, we're all, you know, but I'm subject to the same frustrations everybody else is. I can't help thinking if we had a little bit more perspective, that a lot of these things wouldn't happen. And that's a nice thing to hope for.
How can we lift our gaze?
I think if we reach out to find those perspectives, you know, I don't recommend near-death experiences for everybody. They're very unpleasant and hard to recover from. But we also, psychologically, as humans, we don't like to think about the fact that we're going to die. So I think part of what drives that intense frustration that we have, psychologists say, is because we have that intrinsic denial of our own demise that's coming. That's the thing all humans share. We know we're not going to get out of here.
Right. We're all headed toward the same exit. In fact, in the book, you get at the gift that mortality can be. This brevity, maybe the shortness of time, is what gives us some kick.
Well, that's what one of the people who reached out to me had studied Buddhism and said that that's a tenet of, and I haven't studied it, but he said that the tenet was the impermanence of life is what gives it its value. And I responded and said, that's amazing and beautiful, and thank you for sharing it. And then immediately responded, I'll go you one better. Achilles apparently said, the gods are jealous of us because they live forever. But we may be doing something for the very last time that we'll ever do it. And with that comes all this value and weight and that they can't touch because they don't have that mortality waiting for them. So I think the more we think about it, the less we worry about it. And the less we worry about it, the more we can find amazing things to do, you know, with those moments.
You hear that? Morbid people, there is nothing wrong with you. Big hug to the morbid people.
Yes. Here's a shout out to morbidity.
Ken Boynton's fable of life and questions in a short time on a tiny rock is called Blip. You can find it on Amazon. This is KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information.